Jeremy Corbyn is in Northern Ireland today, his first visit as the Labour leader. But before he even landed, he has angered some unionists. The DUP say they invited Mr Corbyn to meet IRA victims, but the Labour Party say the invite came too late, so the meeting will not go ahead. Mr Corbyn will also set out his vision for Brexit. He will call for the revival of the contentious British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference to enable the UK and Irish governments to work together to save power sharing in Northern Ireland. And in a newspaper article yesterday, Mr Corbyn's spokesperson said a combined majority throughout the North and South want a united Ireland. The DUP's Jim Wells with us this morning. Well, my goodness, Jim, if Jeremy Corbyn ever got to power, I'm not sure that would be rosy for your party or indeed unionists.
Stephen, it would be absolutely frightening, the prospect of this gentleman taking power. My career and Jeremy Corbyn's are the same length. And I can remember so much of what this man has done. For instance, this is the gentleman who invited Gerry Adams to Westminster to meet him a week after the Brighton bombing. This is the politician who was arrested for protesting outside a court where IRA terrorists who'd been convicted of, or who are subsequently convicted of murdering five people, were present. This is the gentleman who has ducked and dived for decades as to where he stands with terrorism and the IRA. So at least he's being consistent at the minute. He has.
Well, he says he condemns all violence.
Yes, but that's the general phrase, of course, that Sinn Féin used for years. When he's asked to condemn specific incidents, he will not do so. And of course, he's been consistent because, of course, here we have a situation today where he had a golden opportunity to try and right some of those wrongs by meeting representatives of the victims, and of course, he snubbed them as well. And no one's going to tell me that he couldn't amend his itinerary for 40 minutes to meet the people who really could explain to him the impact of IRA terrorism on this country.
And we see that story in the Belfast Telegraph this morning, where one of your colleagues has invited Jeremy Corbyn to meet IRA victims. And the Belfast Telegraph reporting that the Labour Party say the invite came too late, and the DUP saying, well, actually, he got it on the 14th of May.
Yes, and needless to say, I know whose version I believe on this one. I mean, it is, even if there wasn't an invite, it is absolutely inexplicable that this man, who potentially could be the next Prime Minister, though the DUP will do everything to prevent that happening, but this man, that he didn't even consider it worthwhile to meet victims. He shouldn't have to have been asked. He should have made it an absolute priority. And this is a man who has his colleague, Mr McDonnell, and so many others within the left wing of the party, who's so ambiguous in terrorism that he needs to put things right. And then, of course, he's over here and he is not prepared to meet those who have lost so many of their friends and relatives over the last 40 years.
The last time that we spoke to Jeremy Corbyn, I did ask him about his views on violence and specifically IRA violence. Let's just remind ourselves, Jim, about some of this interview with Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, quite simply, throughout the 1980s, I maintained contact with Sinn Féin and believed that there had to be a political, not a military, solution to the situation in Northern Ireland. The British government developed that process. The Labour Party developed that process. And eventually, we had the agreement between the SDLP and Sinn Féin, which was an important step forward, and then the historic agreement between the generality of the Unionists and the generality of the Republican movement. We got the two ceasefires and eventually the Belfast Agreement. Northern Ireland has taught the whole world an awful lot about resolving conflict by understanding the historical process of both communities. That surely is something we can all be proud of.
But let me understand what you stand for and what your view is, for example, towards the IRA. Were you sympathetic to what they were doing?
My point was always that there had to be a political peace process to avoid the violence, avoid the bloodshed, and avoid the deaths. And it was that whole direction that I wanted things moved in. And as I said earlier, the great achievement of the two ceasefires and then the Belfast Agreement is something that we can all move forward
But do
from.
You condemn what the IRA did?
I condemn all bombing. It's not a good idea. It's terrible what happened.
It's not the question. The question is, do you condemn what the IRA did?
look, I condemn what was done by the British Army as well as by other sides as well, but what happened in Derry in 1972 was pretty devastating as well.
Do you distinguish between state forces, what the British Army did, and the IRA?
Well, in a sense, the treatment of IRA prisoners, which made them into virtual political prisoners, suggested that the British government and the state saw some kind of almost equivalence in it. Now, my point is that the whole violence issue was terrible, was appalling, and came out of a process that had been allowed to fester in Northern Ireland for a very long time. And surely we can move on a bit and look towards the achievements of the peace process and things forward.
But if you're a potential candidate for Prime Minister of the UK, Jeremy, it's fair for me to push you one more time. Are you prepared to condemn what the IRA did?
What it's fair to push me on is how we take the peace process forward.
Well, it's fair for me to ask you.
How we take it, you can ask any question you like.
Are you prepared to condemn what the IRA did?
Can I answer the question in this way? We gained ceasefires. They were important and they were a huge step forward. Those ceasefires brought about a peace process, brought about a reconciliation process, which is something that we should all be pleased about. Can we take the thing forward rather than backwards?
Are you refusing to condemn what the IRA did?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Are you refusing to condemn what the IRA did? Jeremy.
Hello. I think we're going to have to do this later, you know.
Okay, well, let me just this last question while it's quiet there. Are you refusing to condemn what the IRA did? So that was that interview from August 2015. Mr. Corbyn, they had confirmed an interview with the Nolan Show, which they cancelled last minute last night. Jim, what's your reaction to that?
Well, Stephen, I counted 8 separate attempts you made there to get Corbyn to condemn IRA violence, and 8 separate occasions he ducked and dived and dodged. Can you see why he's cancelled the interview with you today? Because clearly his officials have reviewed the records and now recall that interview, and they know full well that you're going to put exactly the same questions to him today. Now that he's over here in Northern Ireland.
Well, Jimmy wouldn't be the only politician to duck an interview with the Nolan Show, but we'll not go into that this morning.
But the difference here, of course, Stephen, is he agreed to do the show interview, and then he has decided not to. I think that's the difference. And it's inconceivable that someone of his status at Westminster would do that. The reality is he knows people are going to try and tie him down and ask him to unequivocally condemn the murder, not only of people in Northern Ireland, but even members of Parliament. He just won't do that.
And do you condemn state violence?
I think there's no equivocation between those who are the legitimate members of the police, the UDR, etc., and our own army, and those who are terrorists. Because remember,
when forces of the state overstep the mark, would you condemn that?
If the forces of the state break the law, then they should be amenable to the law. But the reality is no one in our security forces ever went out in the morning to deliberately kill or maim anyone. They went out to defend our society and did so extremely bravely. The IRA went out...
You don't think the British were involved in collusion?
Stephen, that's a totally different issue, and I wasn't briefed this morning to come on and speak about that. I'm here to speak about Corbyn's visit. What I can say to you is that I will never, and no unionist will ever see any equivalence between those who we appoint and those who recruit to protect us against terrorism and those who went out every morning to maim and to murder innocent civilians. All are amenable to the law, but the point was, with Corbyn's interview, he was given many opportunities to pledge his support for the security forces and condemn terrorism, and he wouldn't do it. And yet this is the man who could potentially be the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. That's extremely worrying, and that's why I'm proud of our 10 MPs at Westminster who are doing everything possible to make certain that this never happens.
Well, Jimmy, because stay there for us. Claire Hannah also joining us from the SDLP this morning. Claire, this is your sister party.
Hello, Stephen.
Good morning to you, Claire. This is your Stephen, sister. Paul. And I know you have to go in a moment or two. And you don't agree with his Brexit strategy.
No, we don't. And I nearly hung up the phone there because legacy is always an important conversation to have. But I did come on to talk about Brexit, and we don't. And we have engaged quite intensively with Labour over the last few months. With a view to, I mean, they are the opposition party and they can be our biggest aid to limiting the damage of Brexit. And while we're working with Dublin and Brussels, who can take the sting out of it, it's really London that have the controlling hand in how much the damage of Brexit is limited. So we're glad Jeremy Corbyn's going to the border and going to meet people to discuss this and to see firsthand that Labour do need to move to a position of supporting both participation in the alignment with the single market and the customs union, because we know now after 2 years that they are the only ways of avoiding either a border across the island or a border down the Irish Sea, neither of which are acceptable to the SDLP.
But he's going to set out his vision for Brexit again today, isn't he? That's what we're expecting to happen. What would you say to him about his policy on it?
Well, I think his policy is in the wrong place. We've been quite open with him about that. Yes, Labour are our sister party and we share a great number of values. We don't agree on everything. I have two sisters. They're my best friends. We don't agree on absolutely everything and we engage in a respectful manner with the Labour Party. We've hosted various delegations. I've spoken at a number of meetings in Westminster on this. And that's in the spirit of the SDLP, not just jumping up and down about Brexit, but trying to do the meaningful, practical, procedural things that we can.
And what is it about his Brexit strategy that you fundamentally disagree with?
Well, I think he supports participation in the customs union, alignment with the customs union, but that is insufficient to prevent a border either on the island or between the two islands. We think that the Labour Party need to commit to full alignment with the single market. I understand that Jeremy Corbyn's opposition to that is primarily around some concerns about state aid, but we don't believe that those are insurmountable. If you look at Germany, for example, they use state aid considerably more than the UK do. So we're hoping that Jeremy Corbyn won't leave in any doubt when he leaves here that is the only way to prevent a hard border either on the island or down between the islands. And it's fair to say the Labour Party have, particularly in the 90s, really done a lot of heavy lifting for the Good Friday Agreement and for stability and devolution. And we know that it's full of, as are other parties, but the Labour Party in particular, full of people of goodwill to the island of Ireland. And we're hoping that comes through in this policy.
I know you need to go this morning, Claire, so thank you very much indeed. Kelly from the Labour Party. Morning to you, Phil.
Good morning.
Well, Jim Wells counted it there during that interview. Now, it was August 2015, to set the context for it. He said he counted 8 times that Jeremy Corbyn refused to specifically condemn IRA violence.
Well, look, Stephen, it's, you know, quite easy for Jim Wells to rehash same old arguments we hear in relation to Jeremy Corbyn when he's mentioned in the context of Northern Ireland. But what it does is distract from the very important reason why Jeremy Corbyn is coming to Belfast and tomorrow to Derry, and that's to speak on the issue of Brexit, which Jim Wells' party is frighteningly out of touch with when it comes to the mood of the Northern Ireland public. And he would do well, rather than playing this kind of political football with victims, which I think is appalling, would be to listen to what Corbyn has to say while he's here and engage with it, because this is a change which is going to have profound effects for the island of Ireland. And Corbyn, as I see it, is a prime minister in waiting. So it's important that our politicians engage with the reason why he's coming here today.
Jim?
I think that's a frightening image of Corbyn being the Prime Minister in waiting. Yes, well, I think as he meets people in Northern Ireland, much of what he said will be drowned by his past and people's memory. He has a golden opportunity today and tomorrow to come out and clearly and unambiguously condemn IRA terrorism and the murder of innocent civilians. If he doesn't take that opportunity, well, then his political image will be utterly tainted amongst the people of Northern Ireland. Yes, Brexit's important, but he knows full well the significance of his past, and his past needs to be dealt with. And he needs
Jim, what is frightening is that 10 DUP MPs have taken £1 billion from a Tory government to prop them up in power, who are delivering a car crash Brexit to the UK, who are seeing increasing numbers of citizens using food banks and who are destroying the NHS, laying off firefighters and policemen. And that's your party that is sitting in the House of Commons, keeping a zombie government in power and stopping the kind of transformative Labour government that we need that will rebuild the NHS, look after our schools and the education of our students and deliver the housing that people need. We're witnessing a homelessness epidemic across the UK, and your party, the DUP, are propping that up. That's what? Frightening, and that's disgusting.
Well, if the DUP are preventing Jeremy Corbyn becoming the leader and the Prime Minister of this country, then they're doing a very good job. I think the vast majority of unionists are utterly appalled by Corbyn's view on Northern Ireland and certainly will want their political representatives to do
it. Sorry, Jim, appalled in what way? Is it in no? Are you saying that it is inconceivable or it's wrong for someone to hold the position that Ireland should be united? That's somehow a belief or an aspiration that is wrong, because I don't see it that way. He fully agrees with consent. He fully agrees with the constitutional status being in the hands of the people who live here. There is no problem with that.
What about Phil Kelly, the comments from Mr. Corbyn's spokesperson that he believes the combined majority in the North and South want a united Ireland?
Well, I think that's fact, and I think that that anyone reading.
Why do they drop that in before Mr. Corbyn comes to Northern Ireland?
Well, he was asked a question, and he answered it. Jeremy Corbyn's position on Ireland is well documented and dates back decades, as it does. But he's a protege of Tony Benn. You only need to look at Tony Benn's views on Ireland, and generally the Labour left across England, have a very consistent view that they believe in Irish unity by consent. That is not shocking news, despite what the newsletter or the Belfast Telegraph want to splash on their front pages. Anyone that's shocked by that news clearly hasn't been keeping up to date with where Corbyn stands and where the Corbyn project stands.
Jim?
Stephen, I am just absolutely speechless to hear anyone who can defend this man. This man, if he ever did come to power, would represent a major threat to the Union, a major threat to Brexit, a major threat to the stability of our country. A man who is radical, he's left-wing, he's extreme in his views, and is as his team. I mean, John McDonnell's no better. And this, unfortunately, is the prospect we're facing. And therefore, it's absolutely vital that our 10 MPs continue to do everything in their power at Westminster to block this man getting power.
The threat to the Union, as you put it, the real threat to the Union comes from the Tory government and the DUP. The policies you're pursuing through supporting a government that's delivering a train wreck Brexit will break up the Union, the United Kingdom, much quicker than anything that we could ever have conceived of. Your policy towards the lesbian, gay, bi, trans community here is seeing you erode support in the Union as people watch the South, which used to be a conservative, backward state, move into the 21st century, as the party like yours acts as a blocker to progress and the kind of society that people want to live in.
Here's Stuart.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Here's Stuart and Clougher. Let's bring in Stuart. Morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Stephen. I just wanted to ask Jim Wells a question there. Jim was so quick to jump up and shout about what Jeremy Corbyn should condemn and what he doesn't condemn. But at the same time, when you put the question to Jim Wells about state collusion and state forces being involved in killings in the north of Ireland, but yet he says if is a very small word, and he suggests that there was no state collusion when quite clearly there was. And why should be nitpick between who's a victim and who's not? All victims should be respected, and all victims
Absolutely.
Should get their day in court.
Specifically, of course, is Mr. Corbyn's not prepared to meet any victims today or tomorrow. And that's a glaring omission. And the reason is because they're going to ask the very difficult questions that Stephen put to him 3 years ago. Will he condemn terrorism? And the answer is we can't get a totally unequivocal statement from him to say that he does.
He says he condemns all violence, is what he says.
Jim, yes, he does. Yes, he does.
When Theresa May visited Northern Ireland, she came to an empty cowshed. When David Davis came only weeks ago, he arrived at the border unannounced and left within 5 minutes. Jeremy Corbyn is coming to make a public speech on a very, very important policy on Brexit, which has massive implications for everyone on this island, and it's worth listening to him in that context. You have never, and I've never heard the narrative around questioning Theresa May saying, did you support state collusion? Did you support the murder of Pat Finucane?
Well, hold on a moment. There's no suggestion that Theresa, or indeed evidence that Theresa May supported anything like that. Can we please at least be factual today, and accurate today, and have our conversations based on evidence? Sally in Belfast. Stephen. Morning, Sally.
Hi, Stephen.
Go ahead, Sally.
Stephen, I'm a victim of loyalist violence from years and years ago. No one has come to me to ask, would I like to meet Theresa May or the Home Secretary? I have children 21, 23, and I am so happy that they have grown up here and things have eased and weren't the way it was when I was growing up. You have Jim Wells on there and you asked him a question, and he said he hadn't been briefed on it, and he couldn't answer that question. I mean, how do you need to be briefed on a question, yes or no, about state violence? And as for Corbyn, he's the same stance as he's always had. It's a united Ireland, again, voted democratically by the people.
Absolutely.
So, this conversation, this debate you're bringing up, and there you have the DUP coming in again, IRA victims. Well, I have kept quiet for years. I'm a loyalist victim. And believe you me, I would rather continue with my children than anyone coming back to me all the time to bring up what happened to me.
Sally, thank you. The commentator, Malachy O'Doherty, joining us now as well. Well, Malachy, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is the leader of the opposition, and therefore there is a viable chance that he could be the next Prime Minister. What impact would that have? I guess it reminds Northern Ireland, either for better or for worse, depending on what political view you take, as to the impact that could have on Northern Ireland, Malachy.
Yes, indeed. I think it would be of major significance. I think if you look back through the whole history of the Troubles, there was always an advantage to nationalism in Northern Ireland when Labour was in power. It was Wilson in power, even if you go back to the Civil Rights Movement, who insisted on some movement from the Unionist government at that time, right up to Blair being the one who created the context for the Good Friday Agreement. I think we have to remember that when Jeremy Corbyn and Ken Livingstone and others moved radically towards Sinn Féin and made themselves look bad within the British political context, they were met in the middle by Gerry Adams coming the other way, making himself much more inclined towards party political democratic practice. And that is what, naively or otherwise, Corbyn and Livingstone saw in Adams. They saw him as a party democrat who had the potential to bring the IRA into politics. Now, the question I ask is, if that had not happened, if Adams had not moved from being the very radical socialist that he was in 1977 to being a political party operator learning from the British Labour left, if that had not happened, then what would have brought him, what would have bridged him towards the deal to the meetings with the SDLP and the future peace process? I think if without that you would have a huge gap, you would have a missing stepping stone in the line of history that takes you directly to the peace process. The point that that Corbyn is making of refusing to condemn the IRA exclusively, you know, he did condemn all violence, that includes the IRA. The point of saying that he wouldn't condemn them exclusively is actually enshrined in the Good Friday Agreement. It is enshrined in the Joint Declaration of 1993, presented by John Major and Albert Reynolds, which essentially says that the conflict, the new word they brought in at that time, the conflict in Northern Ireland, was a result of the history. It was an historic legacy. So they were essentially saying, and I think basically this was Hume's analysis as well, they were saying you cannot point the finger at the IRA. I actually disagree with this to a large extent, but this is their thinking. You cannot point the finger at the IRA the Loyalist paramilitaries or the British state or any of them and say, you're the blame, you're the cause of all this trouble. It is a legacy. It comes out of the past. It comes out of the 19th century.
Do you accept,
it comes out of the early,
do you accept that, Jim?
Yes, but what the point I'd like to make, Stephen, is that there's a huge cloud of doubt as to where Jeremy Corbyn stands on these issues. And I take your rebuke about the fact that he condemns all violence, but all he needs to say is, I condemn Le Mans, I condemn Enniskillen, I condemn the murder of Edgar Graham and so many awful tragedies. He only needs to say that absolutely specifically, because that's the question he's being asked. The fact that he ducks and dies and he's very ambiguous about the whole issue indicates...
Tim, you're a good laugh. You really are. You know, there's another thing about Corbyn to be brought into consideration here, and that is... To my observation, a personality which is wary under intense pressure and which is not actually good on its... He's not very good on his feet in front of the media. And neither are you sometimes, Jim. Now, the point is, you brought up this thing. When you were asked about collusion and you were asked about condemning other state violence and so on, you said, oh, I wasn't briefed. I'm not ready to answer. Maybe Jeremy Corbyn, when he was on a train taking a call from Stephen, wasn't all that briefed either. You know, and if you can claim an excuse like that for yourself, then allow it to somebody else.
Malachy, Stephen, you know, Jim will not be happy until Jeremy Corbyn reads from a script that is written by DUP head office. I mean, the real issue is here that it took, and as Malachy has quite eloquently said, it took crusading MPs at great risk to their own reputations, like Ken Livingstone, Jeremy Corbyn, Tony Benn, John McDonnell, George Galloway, to engage in a forgotten corner of the United Kingdom at its darkest hour. And history will judge them kindly, because they helped move this place away from a cycle of unending violence to where we are today. And Jeremy Corbyn is a proud defender of the Good Friday Agreement. And today in Queens, he will be reminding us of the spirit of the Good Friday Agreement and calling for a renewed effort to push through in the spirit of that agreement. I think that should be welcomed not only by nationalists, but by unionists.
Okay.
And everyone in between.
Thank goodness, this is a fiery debate this morning. Stephen's in Bushmills. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Stephen. I would just like to ask Mr. Corbyn, when are the Labour Party going to organise here?
When are they going to organise here? Well, of course, that's an interesting question, because Phil Kelly represents the Northern Ireland Labour Party, and Jeremy Corbyn, on his visit to Northern Ireland, isn't meeting the Northern Ireland Labour Party, Phil, right?
Well, I don't officially represent that party. I'm not a spokesman for them. But, you know, I'm a member of the Labour Party here. Now, the position of Labour fielding candidates is under review by the Labour Party. It's reviewed every parliament. That's currently underway. My feeling is it will not field candidates in the north of Ireland, for the very reason that you see with the Tory DUP deal, the undermining of power sharing. I think that Labour have been vindicated in their stance of not getting involved and saying that, you know, involvement here can look cynical, can undermine the concept of power sharing.
Well, involvement in what? Involvement in a democratic process can look cynical?
Well, yes, I mean, because, you know, it's hard to portray, you know, as I say, there's not very much support to for Labour to offer a validation of unionism among the English left within the Labour Party, and certainly within the Corbyn leadership, there would be little or no appetite for that kind of scenario. And that's just a reality. You know, I'm very happy for Labour to stand here, because I'd never think that democracy is threatened by choice. But I think that Labour activists in the North need to question, is it the best strategy? Because what invigorated the party here was the policies and ideas of Corbyn. So is it the best way of bringing that kind of politics to the north of Ireland through UK Labour standing here, or is it through some other more pragmatic solution? And I think that's what members should focus on in the north.
And we need to move on in a moment or two. But Peter, West Belfast. Morning, Peter.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I was just listening to Jim Wales, and I was saying on your show this morning there that Jeremy Corbyn's not meeting any victims. So why has the DUP highlighted IRA victims over it? And also, Jeremy Corbyn said he condemns all violence. That's just, I mean, have you ever heard a DUP representative being asked about the security force violence? They condemn all violence. That could be straight out of the DUP handbook. This is just hypocrisy of the highest order from the DUP.
Jim?
Well, first of all, I think Mr. Kelly, the way he refers to Northern Ireland and his general words that indicate he's speaking straight from the Sinn Féin dictionary.
Well, why don't you write me a script, and why don't you write Jeremy Corbyn a script?
Because it would be appreciated if you'd refer to us as Northern Ireland. You know who refers us to the North. So that's just a very minor point. But the reality is...
Send me a script, Jim.
The reality is that Jeremy Corbyn can do all of this, and he can support his policy in Brexit, but all we're asking him to do when he comes over today is to condemn violence, to condemn the killing and the murder and the mutilation of ordinary, decent people, Protestant and Catholic. Why is it so difficult for him to do that, and why is he so scared to face the media when they're going to ask him that fundamental question?
Did you listen to the interview, Jim? Because he told Stephen that he condemns all violence.
It seems difficult,
unless you want to again pick out specific incidents, then you want to send that script to him and see if they'll read it.
And you're old enough to remember that's exactly the same words that Sinn Féin used, the sort of woolly phrase, we condemn all violence. When they're asked...
I don't think that's woolly. I don't think condemning all violence is woolly, Jim. I think you need to listen to the implications of that. He condemns all violence.
Can I just ask also, Jim, before you go, because we're near the end of this item. We saw yesterday HMRC saying that MaxFac, and that's one of the options that Theresa May is looking at as a solution for Brexit, and MaxFac is what the DUP supports. It's a policy the DUP supports. HMRC estimate that will cost the United Kingdom economy between 17 and 20 billion pounds. And that's coming from HMRC. Was that factored in, Jim, to the DUP's thinking? A 20 billion pound bill?
And Stephen, this is like so many other predictions, like a double dip recession.
Well, it's HMRC
like an emergency
predicting.
Budget. Yes, and they've
head
all,
of HMRC.
The Bank of England, the Treasury, they've all come out with these predictions. Not one of them has proved to be right. And this is yet another prediction, which undoubtedly will be proved to be totally wrong. Every prediction has been confounded by the stats. And I was on with you on Monday and I mentioned about lowest inflation, lowest unemployment, highest growth, stock market at an all-time high. All the statistical indicators suggest that these people got their predictions totally wrong.
Okay, and you're talking about predictions, in other words, in the future, and a fair enough response to my question. But here's something that isn't a prediction. I mentioned the head of HMRC there. Then you have the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, saying that the British economy, Brexit hasn't happened yet, but that it's already costing the average household, he says, £900 a year. And the British economy, says Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, is already £40 billion smaller as a result of the Brexit vote, he says.
Yeah, and that's why unemployment is at an all-time historical low. The stats just do not match, Stephen. We have all of the naysayers out there predicting gloom and doom as a result of our decision to leave Europe, and statistic after statistic has been confounded, and I've no doubt this one will as well. And the reality is that the economy of the United Kingdom is growing very quickly. We're coming out...
So the governor of the Bank of England says it's £40 billion smaller as a result of Brexit, the Brexit vote. And you're disputing that.
Yeah, this is the Bank of England, for instance, who never saw the recession coming. I mean, how can you depend upon stats which time after time have been shown to be incorrect? And I have no doubt...
Jim, how can you depend on a party that believed giving £1.65 for every £1 spent on burning wood pellets was a good thing for the taxpayer?
Oh, look, we're moving on to totally new territory.
Numbers ain't your best game, is it, Jim?
Well, first of all, this is a subject of an inquiry, and therefore it's not appropriate for anyone to comment. But, I mean, we've reached some LGBT
others exposing it.
To these confidence supply motion, now we're moving on to RHI. Yes, that's a subject that's appropriate for a future discussion, but the reality is the DUP are doing the right thing to make certain that this man does not become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and I wish them every success as they attempt to do that.
And just to be clear, and just to be
popping up a Tory government and supporting Brexit, DUP.
Just to be clear on RHI, there is no law, nor could there ever be, any rule that RHI cannot be mentioned, that does not exist. What the chair of the RHI inquiry has asked for is that witnesses are not approached who are going to be participating in the RHI inquiry, and that people wait until the inquiry has delivered an outcome before they start interpreting stuff that has been reported in the middle of the inquiry. But Jim, it doesn't prevent you from talking about, you know, what Phil Kelly has brought up there, that people, it's already in the public domain, Jim, people were essentially being incentivised to burn.
Yes, Stephen, I was asked onto this programme to discuss Jeremy Corbyn's visit to Northern Ireland.
You were, but I'm just stating a point of order that it doesn't prevent politicians talking about RHI.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is I don't think it's appropriate that politicians comment when the inquiry's in full flow, which it is at the moment.
Okay.
But I do resent the fact is that I've been asked to come on to discuss a specific issue, and it has ranged over every possible matter affecting Northern Ireland.
Well, welcome to journalism in 2018, Jim.
this is
kind of what happens. But okay, but listen,
try.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wells. Thank you, Maliki.
Thank you,
Phil Kelly.